Hello, I'm Mark Peterson, and this is the Stronger Philanthropy Podcast. This is episode 6. This is where we learn to love giving well. Today's guests are Alan and Donna Lamshed, founders of the Acts of Grace Foundation. They've been ramping up their family foundation for over a decade, and recently have come on the scene with a website, social media, and an administrative director. As a part of this process, they wanted an opportunity to learn how other foundations do their work. So they joined Stronger Together in 2015 for a round of grants that we offered that year. It was a joy to work with them and see our funds multiplied for impact. The Acts of Grace Foundation exists to tangibly pour out God's abundant grace on others through partnerships with like-minded organizations. Let's listen in to this conversation now. Alan and Donna, thank you for being on the podcast today. Alan, let's start with you. I heard about you and got to know you, and you presented yourself to me as a very laid-back, thoughtful person. And then I found out this crazy story in your background that you'd won an Oscar. Is that true?
Not quite. It was actually an Emmy.
An Emmy.
And it was my company that won the Emmy, but I had the privilege of receiving the Emmy on behalf of the company, and my wife Donna was there with me, along with one of my other work colleagues.
And that was in Los Angeles?
It was in Hollywood, at the venue where the Oscars, same venue where the Oscars are handed out, but it was a technical Emmy.
Okay, so those are the Emmys that are handed out to technical engineers and
They're handed out to the engineering people and the support people in the background who make the equipment that's used to make the TV programs. So there's no red carpet. The Emmy statue is the same.
Yeah.
And we had the interesting pleasure of hand carrying it home, putting it through the security machine at the airport and all that fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. Good. That's quite a story. I don't know. I don't think I know anybody that's won an Emmy before. So when I met you, you were the first.
Do you also know that he has a personal credit in Star Wars 3?
Okay. Now, I'd heard that as well, and I thought they were connected. So
Nope. They're not connected.
Okay. So Star Wars...
Episode 3.
Episode 3.
Yes, my name appears in the credits. At the very end of the credits...
His two seconds of glory, or fame, maybe that's a better word, 2 seconds of fame.
That's great. So maybe just help us understand how you got there. This is your career, your engineering background.
Right. So I started working for a company, local company here in Burlington, Ontario, back in 1979. It's a small company, and I was employee number 5. I was hired to be the company engineer. So as time progressed, the company was involved in the television infrastructure and motion picture industry. So we worked alongside TV broadcasters and people producing motion picture films, providing technology for them, electronics technology. And over time, that developed into some relationships with the people actually making individual movies, people like Francis Ford Coppola and George Lucas and others, James Cameron, some of the well-known names. So working with technology and developing stuff for them, for their movies, was one of the jobs that I particularly was involved in, heading up the engineering team. I had one other engineer who worked very closely with me doing some of that kind of stuff. And so we developed some stuff that was critical to Lucas's technology that he was advancing in the last, I guess it's not the last episode of Star Wars anymore because we now have episode 7, but episode 3, which was the one that was produced back in the mid-2005 range.
Okay. Very interesting. Yeah. And at the same time, Donna, what were you doing with your life and career?
Well, I was raising 3 daughters. Who are 2 years apart in age. That was strictly accident, not planning. But we have 3 growing daughters who are married, and we have 11 grandchildren between the ages of 2 and 7. So at that time, I was busy raising 3 daughters and began my own, my background is nursing, I'm an RN, and then opened a business doing in the personal services field in our home, so that allowed me to be home when he was traveling, but also to contribute and have a career and a profession. And I did electrolysis for 20 years. So
as a business.
As a business.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah, had more people than I was referring away. And that's always a good thing in business.
And have you sold that business now?
Yeah, I closed the business. I retired 6 years ago.
Okay.
And have been busy being grandma.
And Alan, you retired as well.
I retired. It's coming up 3 years now.
Okay.
So I was with that company for 34 years.
Wow.
So I saw them grow from a very small family business to a public company of over 1,000 employees, a based Canadian company based here in Burlington.
Can you tell us about the journey of making a decision to start your own foundation?
The decision was actually tied in to my employment at the company. About halfway through my tenure there, the founders of the company decided to retire and to sell the company. And so they sold it to two young men who also invited a small group of other investors to join them to purchase the company from the founders. And I was one of those investors. About 8 years later, the company became a public company. And so obviously at that point, my private shares were worth more money than they were initially. And when we were able to appreciate the value of those shares, we realized that it was really a gift that God had entrusted us with. It wasn't just for our own enjoyment only, but that he had entrusted us with that, and we needed to be good stewards of that money, that resource. And so it was at that time one of our investment advisors put us in touch with a gentleman who had been previously the head of another public foundation, and he advised us about starting a private family foundation, which we did in 2006, and called the Acts of Grace Foundation.
Okay. Did you have any context for this other than these investment people telling you this?
No, because my first question to him was, so tell me what that involves and what it is and why I should do it. And we hadn't really known anybody that had done that. My father had started a foundation years and years ago, but he never really did anything with it, and it folded after 4 or 5 years really without any activity. But we hadn't really known anyone else that had done that. So we were newbies.
So tell us about that, Jerry. So that was from 2006 or so.
Yes, so we started the foundation in 2006, which was when the company went public. Our shares were locked down by the Ontario Securities Commission for 2 years to stabilize the value of the shares. When that lockdown finished, we had thought that we would then use some of those shares to fund the foundation. However, you'll probably remember that there was a certain event that happened in 2008, which took a lot of the value of those shares out, as all the stock markets worldwide went down significantly. So we decided to not do anything at that point, and it wasn't really until the value had recovered in 2012 that we were actually able to really fund the foundation. The foundation was active, but it was more a flow through, donate a little bit of money, grant it out type of operation rather than having any capital until that time.
Right.
So in 2012, we were able to donate some of the shares to the foundation, and that's really what started to fund the foundation.
So it's really been since 2012 that things have started ramping up.
Yes.
Yeah. When you started your foundation, you may have had certain expectations. What has happened in the meantime in terms of your expectations about the foundation? Have things changed in how you see things now with the foundation?
I think it's always been our intent that the foundation, that we would fund the foundation, that it would go on in perpetuity. It was not a foundation that we would put money in and it would be done with us. Our hope And our dream is that it would go on a perpetuity to our children and to grandchildren and whatever after that.
So it's like a legacy then that you pass on to your kids.
Right. And that is, I believe, that has always been our dream and our hope. How things have changed, a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I mean, initially, our initial disbursements were done through relationships, so organizations that we personally knew or people that we personally knew that were heading up those organizations. We believed in the work. We believed in them. But I would say we were not always wise or thorough in our investigation, in our due diligence, and those donations had varying levels of success.
What kind of traps can you fall into when you give in that manner?
Well, you really get caught in an emotional relationship. And so if you have a friendship with someone and they have a project, they're in need, and you give once, then they can come looking again and again. And it's hard when it's a friendship to say no, because it's now a relationship-based, it's a personal relationship-based. And you want to form relationships with charities, but you need to be careful. And this is going to sound really ridiculous, but to give money away well is really hard work. You know, like that sounds like a silly thing to say, because there's lots of needs.
It seems like it would be the simplest thing in the world.
Simplest thing in the world.
Yeah.
But what happens is there's an accountability of how the money was used and where it was used. And when it's a friendship-based giving, there's always a reason why something didn't go well, or why the money was moved here or why it was moved there, because it's a friendship, it's a relationship-based. Whereas now we have shifted how that works. And we have always had a granting committee right from the start. We have always had a granting committee of men and women of various walks of life. But their problem was initially, well, it's your money. Do what you want with it. If you really think that's where you want to go, then that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than doing a due diligence and everybody really speaking their mind. And that has been a huge change for us. And that has been a really good change. It removes the emotional, the personal relationship from it.
Yeah.
And so we are in one side of the room personally doing our own giving and tithing. And then
outside,
and then to the right would be the foundation, who then does its own granting.
Okay.
And it's been much better to be able to separate those two.
So that's an interesting strategy that I think is a nice model, to separate your own personal giving off to the side and have the foundation be the more formal aspect to the giving.
I have found it very freeing.
Yeah.
Emily?
Okay.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Very, very, very freeing. And when someone comes looking for information, I hear you have a foundation, can we apply for a grant? And we say, absolutely. You know, please go to the website. Here's the card. Go to the website. Follow the procedure. And my friendship with you is still over here.
Yeah.
And it's been much better. And it's been a much better process for us.
What does the Acts of Grace Foundation focus on? What are your priority areas? Or,
well, first of all, of course, they have to be a registered Canadian charity.
Okay.
That's CRA. That's been just this right from the get-go. And that's actually really good, because we get letters from someone in Bangladesh who has this charity, and you have no way of knowing whether they're honest or whether it's a scam, or no way of assessing whether they've really done the work or not. Not that maybe their work isn't good, but it's really a wonderful level of protection, of weeding out a whole lot of things.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. And then we have really focused on alleviating root causes of physical, material, or spiritual poverty. I'm actually going to read this, because we kiddingly call this our elevator speech.
Let's hear it.
Okay, so our heart is to make grants to projects of registered Canadian charities that seek to alleviate the root causes of physical, material, or spiritual poverty by addressing the basic needs of food, water, shelter, sanitation, hygiene, health, security, education, skills training, employment, salvation, and spiritual growth. And here's what's important, in culturally and geographically relevant manners. We are not North American saviors. We are servants, and we need to come with a servant's heart to make it really culturally and geographically relevant. Mm-hmm. Our way isn't always, North America's way is not always the right way or the best way. Mm-hmm. And that's been a real learning lesson, I think, for all charities in North America. That's been a learning curve.
I know you just went on a site visit to Africa. Did. Maybe just tell us a little bit about your experience there and how that helped you.
Well, I feel like I'm doing all the talking, so I'm going to start. I'll do Rwanda, you can do Ethiopia. We went to Rwanda and to an organization that we had supported and have been supporting for a number of years. Focus of transforming the country by transforming how people think and how they relate to each other. Most of us remember the Rwandan genocide. It was actually 22 years ago last week that the genocide took place, the massive genocide took place. And these young men went into Rwanda. When they entered the country, I believe it was 80% of the people were under the age of 20 and under. And how do you change the hatred? How do you change how people relate to each other? Well, it's you educate them. How they think, how they respond. So they initially built a Christian school, began to realize that that was not going to change the country, and so took the cream of their crop of their teachers. And by the way, this Christian school is run by Rwandans, by Rwandan teachers for Rwandan children. This is not an expat school. So they took the cream of the crop of their teachers and taught them how to teach teachers. Taught them on forgiveness and reconciliation. And they're now working in 49 schools, affecting almost 100,000 children. And this is huge. You change how someone thinks. You change how people relate and how they accept one another. And we got to see teachers. We got to talk to children. We got to speak with parents. And the change it's made in their community. And what an amazing experience to see these children and learning. You're giving them a hand up, not a handout. That's sort of a quote we often hear. You're giving them the opportunity to go to universities. You're giving them the opportunity to learn a trade because they can read and they can write. Education has a priority in the parents' minds now.
One of the other projects that we funded 2012, I believe it was the building of an orphan home for children in Liberia.
Okay.
And we had the pleasure of going on a trip with eight or nine other people to actually be there for the official opening of the school and the move-in of the children. And the home was built to accommodate, I think, 70 or 80 children. There was initially a group of 25 because they wanted to start slow and build the staffing and the infrastructure up for that. But it was just phenomenal to see the joy in these children's hearts to move into this home. Most of these children were either orphans without parents, or they were from families where they were single parent families where the surviving parent couldn't afford to raise them, and so the community had raised them. It was in the middle of a village that was out in the rural area of Liberia, and so we actually did some other work there, medical work and that, in the village. Mm-hmm. For a period of 10 days. So that was interesting to see, for us to be part of that experience.
Tell me some more about your philanthropy journey since 2012. What else have you been involved in?
In 2014, we had spent a considerable amount of time trying to refine the mission, vision, and values of the Acts of Grace Foundation and sort of retooling it, because the volume of our grant applications had increased considerably, and we realized we weren't really doing a very good job managing it. It was just Donna and I that were trying to keep up with everything, and it was all done very manually and we didn't have a lot of good procedures because it was just stuff that we'd figured out on our own and it wasn't necessarily the best way of doing things. Mark, in the fall of 2014, you invited us to participate in Stronger Together for 2015. And for those that aren't familiar, Stronger Together is a group of funders who come together to try and have a bigger impact as they collaborate in giving. So we were part of a group of four grant-making organizations. And we learned a lot during that period of time. It was really about 6 months for the process of receiving initial letters of inquiry and sorting through those, choosing some to go on to a more detailed application. We enjoyed learning firsthand by going on site visits. I think we attended 4 or 5 site visits with you. That was the first time we'd ever done anything like that. And that was very helpful to us.
And that was a lot of fun, too.
It was a lot of
fun. It was a lot of fun to go together.
Oh, it was fun.
And we also, you know, one of the things we learned in that process of evaluating all those organizations was that there were a lot of other Canadian Christian charities doing a lot of good work that we had no idea they even existed, one of which was in our own city.
Yeah.
We didn't even know they existed, and here they were in our back door. So we enjoyed that. We enjoyed learning from some of your years of experience in running the Bridgeway Foundation on how to make some of the things that we were doing best practices. And we also really enjoyed the conversations with the other funders around the table as we wrestled through the final group of 18 applications, trying to figure out which ones were actually going to receive funding and how much they were going to receive and what were the criteria that we would use in making those kind of decisions. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't always easy, but it was, I think, very helpful. Mm-hmm. And we learned a lot through that process. It allowed us to reflect on how we could learn from all of those approaches, both the good and the bad, mm-hmm. because we realized there was things that were perhaps good for the larger group that maybe weren't really things that we wanted to necessarily adopt for the Acts of Grace Foundation. But we then had at least a basis on which to make those kind of decisions going forward.
An informed decision.
It's an informed decision. And as we were trying to create our new processes, a lot of them ended up being modeled after the process that Stronger Together used. And that's what we're using today as an online system that is a sort of a two-stage application with evaluations and site visits.
Mm-hmm. Good. That's great. Well, I'm so thrilled that you were able to learn that and take that away from our time together.
I was just going to say the other transformational part to this journey is we had the opportunity to interact with a young lady named Frances Wilson, who was on maternity leave. And she was a consultant for Deloitte & Touche, or I guess Deloitte. It's not Deloitte & Touche anymore. It's just called Deloitte. And being on maternity leave, she was, through a personal relationship, we knew this young woman, and asked her if she would put on her consultant's hat, so to speak, and if she would be willing to give us a little bit of time. And again, help us move forward with best practices, redoing our website, our mission, vision, values, articulating it well, articulating it clearer. And so she did that for us. And as she worked through, she had just kept digging into our thoughts and into our hearts. And we'd get to the end of a session with her and we'd say, did that make any sense? And she'd go, oh, yeah, I've got lots of great material here. And
she asked us lots of very difficult questions that we had a hard time answering.
Things you wouldn't normally think of.
Things that we wouldn't normally think of. And we had to go away and think.
What would some of those questions be, for example?
Just trying to probe, you know, what was our real heart in terms of where we wanted the foundation to be 10 years down the road.
Right.
What did we want it to be doing? And we hadn't really, we were worrying about the next month.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Not the next year even. And those were hard things. But that's really what the strategy is. Strategic planning stuff is all about, is looking towards the future.
Mm-hmm. And having conversations. We don't often have the conversation
right.
about, you know, what happens when I'm gone?
Mm-hmm.
And with our own family members, you know, we all need to know what's going to happen.
And what is our intent, and what was our heart intent when we started the foundation?
Mm-hmm.
So we began to realize very, very quickly, watching her expertise, watching her make graphs and chart things and make them come back to us with it all written out. And we'd say, wow, we said that? And we began to really pray and realize, one, that we did not have time, nor because Alan's still involved in his Professional Engineering Association. We also didn't have some of the expertise to take the foundation where we wanted it to go. And realizing some of those things, we began to realize we needed to hire someone at least part-time, which was a big step for us. Okay, we need to hire someone, and we began to pray about that, and one day we were sitting talking and realized that the expertise, everything we needed, was sitting under our nose in Frances Wilson. And we were very foolish, and we thought, oh, she'll never leave Deloitte and come work for us. And so we made the phone call and got her on the phone and offered her the job and said, we're not sure what we can pay you, what Deloitte is paying you, but we will open to talk. And she amazingly and graciously accepted the job. And
wow.
So she is our administrative director for the Acts of Grace, and she is amazing.
Oh, that's
great.
A
very, very talented young woman. And it works out well for her because she works from home and she has four little ones. So this has been a great advantage to both of us. But she brings 15 years of consulting work experience to the foundation and to moving us forward.
Wow, that's great. And she shares your faith.
She shares our faith.
Yeah.
And she's really shared our commitment to the foundation. It's been so exciting to see her get excited
mm-hmm.
about what we're doing and where the foundation's going and the potential it has. So that's also been exciting to see her catch the vision, so to speak, and resonate with our hearts.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad that you have her and that you're able to entrust, you know, the responsibility of this to someone like her.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you hope Acts of Grace Foundation will go in 20 years? That was one of her hard questions, so maybe you've had a chance to think about that a little bit.
Well, we intended when we started the foundation that it would live on after we pass. And so one of our desires would be to see our children and our grandchildren, and ultimately, I guess, great-grandchildren, although that's a long way off because our grandchildren are so young still, have a heart for giving and be involved in some way in what the Acts of Grace Foundation is doing. And so that's one of the things that, you know, down the road we'd like to see as our children get older, or grandchildren get older, is how can we involve them in appropriate, age-appropriate ways?
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't come to conclusions about that, but we're starting to talk about it and realize that there are other groups that are having those same conversations, which we're hoping to leverage, you know, some of their thinking
mm-hmm.
to just, you know, focus our thinking on it.
We thought possibly one of the ways would be to, when the children, maybe 12, 13, take them on a journey to a trip to visit a project that we've funded or supported. And our desire really is that they would have a heart for others, a heart for giving.
Mm-hmm. It's a great way to mitigate against entitlement, a
right.
sense of entitlement in youth, you know, to expose them to some of the bigger world out there.
And how blessed and fortunate
yeah.
we are
mm-hmm.
to live in North America.
How can people connect with you and what you're doing? How would you prefer people connect?
Well, charities would be through the website.
Okay.
if someone is seeking to apply for a grant, then we do two granting cycles a year, January to June, July to December. So it would be, the best way would be to go to the Acts of Grace website and follow the procedures there.
I've been on your website. It's very clear.
Thank you.
And it was very well laid out. I'll put a link to it in the show notes of the podcast so that people can find you.
We do also have a Facebook page, and I believe there's a link on the website to that page.
Okay, Facebook and I think Twitter as well.
I think there's a Twitter account as well. Both those links are on the website.
Good.
I don't know that there's certainly that general foundation email address, info@actsofgrace.ca, is the way to contact us.
Yeah.
Those emails come to Donna and I.
We would love to talk to any other foundations, organizations like that. I think the more we share, the more we gather together and support one another, the better we can do this.
Your attitude is unusual.
Oh,
because
okay.
I like your attitude, but it's unusual. Most people want to protect themselves from notifying the world, you know, where they are.
Okay. Well,
but you're opening your doors.
So, we are.
So that is one of the things we did struggle with for a long time. We operated the foundation more in a confidential mode where we were sort of a couple layers down, and we came to the realization that really we needed to be more transparent about that. And so when we launched the new website in 2015, that was one of the changes we made.
Yeah. Is there a secret to managing expectations and managing the invitations that come your way to meet?
One of the things we've come to realize probably more so over the last year, as we've now been into our second granting cycle of the new online process, is clearly stating the kinds of things that our heart is interested in focusing on. And so we've had several charities come to us and say, please tell us what that is, so that we don't waste your time and we're not wasting our time making applications for things that are way out in left field for where you're focusing. And so we're working on that actively. The elevator speech that Donna gave earlier is sort of the first crack at
right.
trying to focus what things we are interested in doing. And so that would be one of the
You'll continue
things.
To narrow the
Yeah,
focus.
We're still working on it. Yeah. And it may change from time to time, but that's one of the things that we'd like to do, is to get that a little more publicly available so that charities that are looking at our website will know the kinds of things that we are interested in. All of our previous projects that we've supported are listed on the website, and just with a one or two sentences about what they were about, so you can see what, you know, the kinds of things that we have funded. Those may or may not always have been in alignment with what our current thinking is,
mm-hmm.
and that may change over time as well.
Yeah. Thanks, Alan and Donna, for joining us today and sharing your story. If you want to know more about the Acts of Grace Foundation, take a look at the show notes where I've got a link to their website and social media. Next episode, we have Thayer Willis joining us. Thayer is an author, speaker, and wealth counselor. She probes the deep motivations and challenges in having wealth and believes philanthropy is a way to overcome the dark side of wealth. That concludes today's podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast at our website at strongerphilanthropy.ca, or you can find us on iTunes or on your Android podcatcher apps. If you want to reach out, email me at strongerphilanthropy@gmail.com. Message me on Twitter at @LoveGivingWell or Facebook Stronger Philanthropy. Buen camino.